Time to get our weekly view from the middle. See what he's been up to for USA Today online, usatoday.com. You can pick up a copy at your local newsstand. Follow on Twitter. The handle is at George Schroeder. He's our Wednesday leadoff guy. George, how are things?
Things are good. How are you?
Awesome. So would I be accurate in saying you work for a national publication, you cover college football, a lot of college hoops, and so, you know, are you almost like a teacher from August through late May? You're just on the go, but when summer hits, you get a little downtime, you get to unwind and kind of at the same time recharge the battery for the rush that hits in August?
Well, I mean, I suppose you could say that. I mean, there's stuff to do for sure. I mean, business of college sports, things like that. But it's definitely slower this time of year than it is, when college football cranks up again. And really, in mid-July, when the media days start, is when it really cranks up for us. But yeah, this is a slower time of year. But it's not quite like the break that the teachers get. It's also not nearly as important a job as the teachers do, as far as that goes, as long as we're going to have full disclosure.
So, all right.
There you go.
I'll give you that one. I always say, in my capacity doing this, I get upset this time of year because now I got to work. I've got to find stuff to talk about. But NBA draft is tomorrow. And you and I spoke for a couple of weeks leading up to the finals, and I'm wondering, so many anticlimactic results. We thought the Cavs-Warriors would be the payoff. So there's been trades, there's been swapping of draft picks, Paul George news, Dwight Howard moving. Has the last 8 days been more eventful than the 2 months of the NBA playoffs?
Well, probably, considering that the NBA playoffs were Dullville. I mean, it was just wasn't very exciting. I mean, there were a couple of individually exciting games, but not many. And early there were a couple of interesting series, but not between teams that were going to factor into anything deep into the playoffs. So, yeah. Now, I have to tell you, if you're saying that you're going to be a lot more excited by the various maneuverings and or non-maneuverings and just rumors that might attend, trades and draft and then free agency after that, and you're going to say that's better than the actual product on the floor, that doesn't speak very well for the playoffs. That's the way I come up with on that. But it has been a kind of an interesting period, and we still got some time for it to get more interesting.
Yeah, we've got 25 hours. All right, let's forget personnel and whether the Celtics need a shooter or the Lakers need a point guard or which injury whoever Philadelphia picks will suffer. You've seen a lot of these guys in person, a lot on TV. You've heard the analysis. So if you were picking first and the goal was, look, not a perfect fit, but the guy you think will be the best NBA player, who would you take and who else would be in the mix?
Well, I mean, is LaVar Ball available? No.
I don't know if he's got eligibility left.
I think he does. I think you're eligible. I mean, I think you're eligible for the draft. You haven't declared, but, I mean, theoretically, you could be taken. So certainly LaVar, who, as we know, was better than Michael Jordan, could be taken. I don't know. I mean, it certainly appears that it's going to be Markelle Fultz. What's interesting about that is, you know, his talent was just buried on a bad team.
Yeah.
I mean, completely buried, and despite his obvious talent. And it's not that the scouts are in the mode of blowing it. He's clearly really, really good. Despite his obvious talent, it wasn't enough to lift the Huskies to any semblance of, really respectability, frankly. I mean, that's interesting. But I guess he's probably the guy. You know, the guy that I'm most intrigued by, and he shouldn't be the number one pick, and he won't be the number one pick. I guess he might be number three. With the Celtics is Josh Jackson, the Kansas player.
Right.
He didn't play exceptionally well against Oregon, but I saw him 3 or 4 times in person during the season. And, you know, he just flat looked like a star, especially when you consider he looked like a man among boys as a freshman. And he's playing, a bunch of upperclassmen most nights. So I think that's a guy that might be a surefire NBA player. Other people who know the league and talent a lot better than I do probably aren't quite as sure, but I'm really intrigued to see what he does.
No, I'm with you. 6'8" guard. I'd be willing to give that a shot.
Very athletic.
Yep.
You know.
By the way, my position, my role on an NBA team, when I say spot up shooter, they would be like, stand there. Don't pass. Don't play defense. Don't run the floor. Just stand right there. So I've thought this through.
Would there really be any shooting from there, or would it just be stand there?
Well, like I said, spot up. And if I'm wide open, I'd shoot. Otherwise, probably not going to make an NBA roster.
Okay. But, I mean, you could be like, oh, who am I thinking of? You could be like Doug Gottlieb when he played college ball and they basically left him wide open as a point guard to shoot.
I might actually make one, though. I'd be more Kyle Korver without the skill, talent, and guys willing to get me the ball.
Okay, so you can shoot is what you're saying.
Yeah, that's it. And that's only it, and that's explicitly it. All right, we're talking with George Schroeder, USA Today. So Athlon came out with one of those lists that, as somebody who does this time of year, I thank them, 50 best college football players the last 50 years. And when you think about what you do and where you've been, the big games, the Heisman winners, what you've seen in person, you know, when you saw this guy, you were just like, wow, this is special. Who are a few of the guys that you've seen in person that come to mind when this topic surfaces?
Well, the best running back I ever saw was Adrian Peterson in college, that is. Just in terms of sheer talent and ability just to make plays. In terms of, like, transcendency, Vince Young, when he really had it going for Texas.
Yeah.
Cam Newton, for example. Peyton Manning, way back in the 90s when I was a young pup, was fantastic for Tennessee. I remember watching him come in as a sophomore and do things as a quarterback that we all got really used to seeing him do to people in the pros, but as a sophomore quarterback in college, it was amazing to see him dissect the defense. So, I mean, those guys stand out to me, I think. I mean, Marcus Mariota, I realize he made sort of the bottom part of this list, was fantastic too. I thought you haven't seen very many playmakers that kind of combined his skills over the last few years either. He was pretty good too that I got to see in person. Yeah, that's not a bad start, I guess. There are a bunch of those guys for sure. But that's probably, and I guess I lean a little bit towards the quarterbacks on this, and just because
right.
Those are the guys that can make the plays that they get the ball so much that they make a lot of plays and you get to see them a lot. But all those guys are on this list and should be.
Yeah, you know, I thought Mariota was interesting because, you know, obviously living here, I don't leave Eugene a lot. And I consider sometimes you can get stuck in a little bit of a duck bubble because so many people here worship at the altar of Mariota. But as the most recent one from 2014, you know, you see the national picture. You know a lot of the guys who were writers in the poll. Paul Meyerberg is a colleague of yours. Ivan Mizell. The guys you talk to, would they have that kind of same feeling about Mariota? Because I was like,
I think so. I mean, he definitely fits in the top 50 college players. I mean, that's a pretty special place to be when you consider how many players are every year.
Right.
Just at the FBS level. Or just say at the Power 5 level, 65 teams. I mean, how many players is that? 6,500 players right there if they all had 100, you know?
Yeah.
If you just took it down to the starters. If you just said the All-Americans every year, let's say it's 25 first-team All-Americans every year, right? I mean, that's pretty special to be in the top 50 of all time in this ranking. And, you know, and those are some astute guys that there's a reason they didn't ask me. They've got astute guys. One other guy who's on that list that I saw in person that I shouldn't have left out is Reggie Bush. And obviously Duck fans remember him too. I mean, he was unbelievable in some of the things he did in college. Just a fantastic talent.
Yeah, I had on my personal list that I've seen, who, you know, mostly here at Autzen, AP was here for that game in 06, Reggie Bush. I saw the kickoff classic in 1983 at the Meadowlands, that Nebraska team with Mike Rozier that would get upset by Miami. So, like I said,
yeah.
every once in a while, I have to fess up how old I am. We're talking with...
You were in, like, your 15th year of radio in Eugene then, right?
Wow. Kaboom. Well done. Well played. I'm talking with George Schroeder of USA Today. Even though I never saw him in person, once he was in his Heisman season of 88, Barry Sanders, I probably saw half his games on TV, and he was second on this list. You live in the Sooner State, but there are a lot of Oklahoma fans. Kind of curious if you incorporate everything and how passionate the fans there are about football 30 years later. How revered is Sanders as far as where he may rate in the hierarchy of fans in that state?
Well, he's a little bit of an enigma because he's not been a very public person ever, especially right. since he finished his pro career. And so lives a very low-profile life and slips in and out of Stillwater occasionally for certain things. But I think he ranks really highly. People understand how good he was. You know, there's an interesting thing here is how many of these top 50, and obviously some of them didn't have really pro careers to speak of at all. Tim Tebow, I think, is a top 10 guy in this list. Right. Didn't have a pro career at all, unless you count the Mets. But and I know you don't. But, Barry Sanders, I think there's a little bit of the deal where most people who know Barry Sanders who check this list out probably saw him with the Lions more than they saw him with the Oklahoma State Cowboys. But the season that he had in 88 was the best season probably anybody's ever had in college football, including Christian McCaffrey, not last year, but the year before when he had that fantastic season and probably should have won the Heisman. I realize that Christian set records, but it's a different era. I mean, Barry Sanders did things in the way he did it, and the way he stopped and started and moved laterally and then went to full speed. I don't think we've seen very many guys who can do that. To the extent that we've seen him do that, it was probably watching the NFL and not so much watching with the Cowboys.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I always say when people get into the debate about the best, I'm like, I'll debate you all you want the best, but the most spectacular, you're going to have to do a lot of convincing to convince me there's somebody more spectacular than Sanders.
Yeah, the one thing about Barry Sanders that a lot of people don't know either is he only had that 88 season as the starting running back. He shared the backfield and shared carries and got fewer carries, frankly, with a pretty good back in his own right.
Yep.
Earlier in his career in Thurman Thomas.
Yep.
So Oklahoma State, by the way, had a pretty good run of running backs going right there too. We all saw Thurman Thomas. All he was a very good pro back too.
And a lot of people probably could win a couple of beers at the bar to remind them the quarterback is the coach right now. Mike right, Gundy same, back then.
Same hairstyle then as now.
Yeah. A great 80s mullet. Well done. All right. Final thought. Last week we discussed the rather sudden retirement of Bob Stoops, but I never followed up with the guy they hired, the offensive coordinator, Lincoln Riley, who when the season starts turns all of 34. Man, that's a prestigious job at that tender age. What's been the buzz among Sooner supporters or from your chair about, you know, that's handing the keys to a blue blood program to a young guy?
Yeah, well, I mean, and I said, I've gotten to know Lincoln a little bit over the last couple of years since he's been in at Oklahoma on the staff. They were in the playoff a couple of years ago. I went to his hometown of tiny Mule Shoe, Texas.
Wow.
Where he was a Mule Shoe High School mule quarterback before he went to Texas Tech and tried out for the team and was going to be the fifth or sixth walk-on quarterback. And Mike Leach recognized that he'd be a good mind and said, hey, you're never going to see the field as a quarterback. Why don't you come be a student assistant? And after he got mad about it, he went and did it, and that turned out to be the best thing he ever did. And he has been a prodigy ahead of his time ever since. He was a full-time head coach at 20, I mean, a full-time assistant coach at Texas Tech at like 22 or 23. He went with Ruffin McNeil to East Carolina to be the offensive coordinator there at 26. You know, he's been at Oklahoma now. I think this will be his third or fourth season. Oklahoma fans, to answer your question, I think they're cautiously optimistic. First of all, I think it's still a shock to them that Bob Stoops isn't the coach.
Right.
But then I think they're cautiously optimistic that, wow, this guy really is young, but he's really sharp, and they hope that he's special. You know, the jury's going to be out on that for a year or two, at least. And you never really know when a guy goes from, an assistant coach to a head coach, whether he's 33 or 43 or whatever. But, around college football, people really think very highly of Lincoln Riley. Oklahoma had just given him a $1.3 million a year contract as an offensive coordinator in the hopes of fending off, keeping him around a couple more years and fending off, say, like a Middle Tennessee State type of school that wanted to hire a head coach, knowing they wouldn't keep him away from a Power 5 job, that he would have to take one of those if he wanted to, but hoping they could keep him a couple years longer and then maybe get him back from a Power 5 job. Instead, Bob Stoops unexpectedly retires, and this sort of wink and nod succession plan went into effect immediately.
No, that's going to be a really interesting storyline for 2017. George, as always, a lot of fun. Always look forward to our chats. Follow along with what he's up to at George Schroeder on Twitter. Enjoy the rest of your week, your weekend. We'll catch up next Wednesday.
Look forward to it. Thanks, man.
All right, take it easy.